The new play, Truth Lies Diana, is going to stoke controversy for many reasons. And not only does it delve into the circumstances surrounding Princess Diana's death, but also touches on James Hewitt's role in her life, to say the least. John Morgan is no doubt the world's leading expert on the assassination of the princess. He has another book out called How They Murdered Princess Diana, The Shocking Truth. And I'm delighted that from Australia, John joins us now. Hello, John.
Hello, Bill. Good to talk to you again.
And for you, sir. And another weighty tome I have in front of me as I drop it on the desk here and it breaks the wood. How many is this now, John, you've written?
That'll be about my 10th book on the death of Diana.
10th book. And, you know, these are not, as people have not heard you on the radio before, these are not the kind of meanderings of some madman. These are carefully put together factual books. What keeps you going, John, with these?
Yeah, well, it's a series, really. Like, I've written 6 volumes in the Diana Inquest series, and this particular book, it's a abridgment of the 6 volumes, so it sort of is a narrative that covers the whole story.
Right.
And so it's a sort of like each book's led to the next book sort of thing. The case is so complex, like it's not an easy thing to organise a crash and to assassinate someone, and it wasn't in the case of Princess Diana. And so there's a lot of factors involved. And each of the volumes deals with different aspects of the case. And this book brings it all together.
So if somebody wants to kind of pick up the story, this is really the one to get, because they can get it all in one book.
I'd say that's right. And then if they want any particular detail on a certain area, then they can get another volume. But, yeah, basically the story is in this book. That's right.
Now, you made a statement there, and you've made them on the show before, and can you, just for the benefit of people who've not heard you talk before, tell us what your summation after 10 books worth of this is as to what happened to Princess Diana?
Yes, well, what occurred was, it was Paris, 31st of August, 97, and the evidence points to that she was in the Mercedes that was driving through central Paris heading to Dodie's, her boyfriend's apartment, and the car was pursued by several large motorbikes that can be proven not to be paparazzi. Mm-hmm. And these bikes forced the Mercedes into the Alma Tunnel, and one motorbike got in front, and there was a flash probably from a strobe light, which blinded the eyes of the driver of the Mercedes, and the car, he lost control. It hit a white Fiat Uno that was in the tunnel, and the result of the crash crashed into the 13th pillar of the tunnel, and the result of that was that the two people on the driver's side died instantly, and the two people on the passenger side survived the crash. And the two people on the passenger side were Trevor Rhys-Jones, the bodyguard, who's still alive today, mm-hmm. and Princess Diana was in the back. And so what then happened was the evidence indicates that the people that were working the ambulance were not working in her interests, and they took 1 hour, 43 minutes to take her to the hospital. And there's quite a bit of evidence pointing to the sinister actions by the people in the ambulance. And one of the aspects of that was that they stopped for 5 minutes, just 500 yards short of the hospital gates. And there was no credible explanation for why there was such a stoppage. And the expert at the inquest, a cardiothoracic expert, said, well, if you get that close to the hospital, you'd put your foot on the accelerator. You wouldn't be stopping. Mm. And the situation with Diana was that she had been in a high-speed car crash, and she had thoracic trauma, the people in the ambulance knew that, the doctors, and yet they so once they knew that, they should have been getting her straight to hospital, because that was the only place that could deal with any possible internal injury as a result of that trauma. Mm-hmm. And there was a chance that there would be an internal injury because she had been in a 60-mile-an-hour crash with not wearing a seatbelt.
Yes, so that's the kind of summation of it. And, of course, that then begs the question, who would have put together such a thing and what would the motives have been? And what's your conclusion on that for the benefit of people who have not heard you before, John?
Yes, well, the evidence points to a dual motive. Firstly, she was upsetting a lot of people in high places with her anti-landmines campaign, and later on, an agreement was signed by a lot of countries to ban landmines, and she was instrumental in that. The agreement was made 17 days after she died. But the evidence points to when you think about her anti-landmine campaign, she was a humanitarian. She said that on several occasions. Mm. And so, you know, it wasn't a question of eradicating landmines alone. She probably would have moved on to other weapons. So she was a very powerful woman, and people tend to forget that at that time people really took notice of what she was doing, and the public was swayed by what she did.
Yeah.
So that was a factor. And when you the evidence points to three countries being involved, the UK, France, where the crash happened, and also the US. And those three countries were the major Western arms-producing nations. So there's that side of it, and then the other side points to involvement by the senior royals and the royal family.
Yeah.
The motive there for them was basically goes back to 1992 when Diana went public in collaboration with a book written by Andrew Morton, mm-hmm. where she went into some details. There were some details in the book about information of, you know, how she'd been mistreated by royals over the years and various aspects of the breakdown of all the problems in the marriage and things like of that nature, and with Charles, and also her bulimia. Anyway, it was a thing that was unprecedented in the royal circles.
Yeah.
And she upset the senior royals when she did that, and the result of that was basically the separation. The Queen ordered the separation of Charles, which occurred later that year.
And then came Dodi Fayed, of course, which added to the mix.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's right. That was later. But before that, there was a 1995, she went public on TV with the Panorama program and did something similar but much more powerful in the book. And then, yeah, as you get to 1997, she had a friendship with Mohammed Al-Fayed. He invited her to the villa in the south of France, and she took the future king, William and Harry, to his villa. And Mohammed Al-Fayed was looked on as a person of ill repute by the establishment in Britain. And so that also was a sort of upsetting thing for the senior royals and the establishment. And then, yeah, as you say, the relationship with Dodi Fayed started after that. And so that was another factor, because then you've got the prospect of if they had children, then, you know, that would be a Muslim connection in the royal family. So that was a factor as well. So yeah, there was plenty of – Diana had created enemies in high places, I suppose, by what she did, you know, but she was sort of – she didn't have like she was working as a humanitarian as far as the arms were concerned, and she had been extremely mistreated by the royals when you go into the history of what occurred. And so that basically there's the dual motives.
And it then brings us to the fact that this story, out of pretty much a lot of stories that we've heard of this nature, it just refuses to go away, doesn't it, John, this story? And everyone keeps asking the questions, asking for the truth. And now we have this new play, which is called Truth Lies Diana. And you have a kind of involvement in more than one way in this, because it shows you being advised in the play, and also you, I believe, met with James Hewitt as part of the research for this play.
No, not me.
Okay.
What happened with the play is that John Conway is actually the playwright in London, and he made contact with me a few years ago,
right,
because of books, and he read my books, and he's used my books as research for the play. And then what happened is he also met up with James Hewitt.
I see. Yeah, yeah, that was not made clear. Yeah, okay.
And so he received that information, like that's been in the press in the UK, about the paternity issue of Harry. And so that was that aspect. He basically used my books as far as the death of Diana was concerned.
Right.
And then in the play, I feature as a as one of the there's an actor playing my part, Barry Bloxham. Mm-hmm. He's playing my part in the play. So it's a sort of biographical thing, because John Conway did come to me years ago, and that's sort of brought into the play that he was using me as his advisor on the events and what occurred with the death.
And basically, it, as you say, it portrays a writer called Ray who's investigating the princess's death to write a play about her. Other characters on the stage include Dodie's father, Mohammed Al-Fayed, Michael Mansfield QC, he's the lawyer who questioned the establishment figures, including the MI6 officers, and Ray's actress wife Susie, as well as James Hewitt himself in the play. You haven't seen the play, I take it, because you're in Australia, but what...
I have actually seen a DVD of it.
You've seen a DVD, and what's your conclusion having seen the DVD?
Oh, it's an excellent play. John Conway's done a magnificent job, really, because this is not an easy thing to do on in a stage, and he's brought it together extremely well. I think that it'll be viewed by audiences, and I feel that it'll raise questions for them about what actually occurred. And I think the main thrust of the play is regarding the death of Diana. But the James Hewitt stuff does come into it as well. But the issues, the questions raised over the death of Diana, they're definitely being brought to the surface of the play, and I think it's excellent what he's done.
Why does this refuse to go away, John? What is it about this story? Is it just because we're fascinated because it's Princess Diana, the much-loved Princess Diana, or is it because people really don't believe the answers that were being given?
Yeah, well, that's really the issue. It is. I mean, the fact that Princess Diana, she is iconic, so that's a factor. But really, the issue is that there are dozens and dozens of questions that the authorities have not addressed and not answered. And even though there was an inquest, when you look into the way the inquest was run, it was so corrupt. Mm. And it's interesting too with the inquest that the jury. See, what happened is there was two police investigations. There was one in France and one in the UK, and they both arrived at the conclusion that the crash was caused by the driver who had been affected by alcohol.
Yes.
And yet when it came to the inquest and it had to get past a jury, that was not the conclusion. The conclusion of the inquest was, the verdict was, unlawful killing by the driver of the Mercedes, but also by the following vehicles. And that's something that hadn't been brought out in the police investigation. Now, the following vehicles were unidentified. And as I said before, they were the motorbikes. That's what the jury were referring to. And it can be easily proven that those motorbikes were not the paparazzi on the night, because the paparazzi were driving scooters and small cars. So you've got witnesses, several witnesses, seeing a cluster of motorbikes around the Mercedes as it went down the expressway and into the Elmer Tunnel. Now, those were unidentified. The jury found unlawful killing on them, on the part of those motorbikes, and yet, once the inquest had concluded, if that had been a normal person who died, it hadn't been Princess Diana, then there would have been an order to the police to establish the identity of the riders on those motorbikes.
Yeah.
And that never happened. That has never happened. There's not one finger been lifted by any authority in the UK and France to establish who was riding on those motorbikes.
The extraordinary thing that you already mentioned about the ambulance, I mean, how do we, as a member of the public, I look at a statement like the ambulance did not leave the tunnel until 1 hour and 18 minutes after the accident. It then crept at what witnesses say was a fast walking pace for the 3.5 miles to the hospital. And as you mentioned, it then stopped for 5 minutes outside the gates. That in itself is just an extraordinary thing.
It is extraordinary, and there's a lot more than that about the sinister actions that went on. When you look at the transcripts of what was said between the ambulance and the base, the SAMU base, the conversations are extraordinary. And, you know, people sort of say, oh, well, in France they have a different system. The ambulance runs on, you know, they have more facilities in the ambulance. They have a doctor in the ambulance. And, but the thing is, and you can tell from the transcripts because of the base is saying, well, when are you leaving the tunnel? When are you going? And the doctors are saying, oh, in a few minutes. But they actually wait there, like you said. It's an hour and 18 minutes before the ambulance leaves the tunnel. And so the thing is that in France there is a different system. But the thing is that if there's an injury that only can be dealt with in a hospital, then it becomes just like our system, Australia and the UK. They will run to the hospital as quickly as possible. You know, they do that, and yet that never happened. And yet they knew that there could be an internal injury that was not. You know, these doctors, they see lots of crashes. They know what you know. If a person's in a high speed crash like that, that there can be an internal injury, and they knew that, but they didn't. They tarried. But there's more to it than that.
Well, indeed. I mean, your 10 books are a testament to that. I mean, the questions that we could ask, and you know, we could go on about this for quite a considerable time. You know, was she expecting a baby? Was she embalmed to hide the truth? Was her driver made a scapegoat? Who was on that mystery bike? Why wasn't she wearing a seatbelt? These are all questions that we've not had good enough answers to.
That's right. And if people read that book or even go to the play, they will learn some answers to these questions. The evidence is in the book, and the play is based on the books. And there's a reason why she wasn't wearing a seatbelt, for example. And the reason is, and it's contained in the police report, which the jury never got to see, that the seatbelt was jammed in the retractable position, so she couldn't actually use the seatbelt. That's why she wasn't wearing a seatbelt, because every witness who attended the inquest and was asked, and there were quite a few, said every time Diana got in a car, she put the seatbelt on. Mm. And not only that, she'd make other people put it on. And she wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
Well, you just said a sentence there. You threw away, you know, the police report, which the jury didn't get to see.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, Bill, what the jury were not shown. I actually was, in 2010, after I'd written a couple of books, I was sent by a whistleblower hundreds of documents that were from within the British police investigation, the Paget investigation, and these were all documents that the jury never saw. And I'm talking about documents like the post-mortem reports of Princess Diana and Dodi Fayed. Now, the jury were expected to establish the cause of death. That's what their job was, to establish the cause of death of Princess Diana and Dodi Fayed, and they were not shown the post-mortem reports. You know, it's astounding. That is astounding.
Absolutely is. It really is.
Like you said, the Paget report, they were not shown the Paget report.
John, I mean, I am not, unlike any other member of the public who, if faced with something and you kind of think, well, I'm not sure that I believe those answers, you do start asking questions. And if the answers were good enough, people like you would go away, wouldn't you? You wouldn't have to write 10 books, but the answers are simply not good enough.
That is absolutely right. If people read any of my books, they'll realise this is not just, I'm not dreaming this stuff up. It's based on the evidence that was heard at the inquest. It's based on the evidence from the British investigation, and it's based on evidence from the French investigation. It's also based on these documents, which are absolutely credible documents that were from within the British police investigation. And this is all evidence. It's real evidence.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, John, as always, we thank you for taking the time to talk to us from Australia. The play is called Truth Lies Diana, if you were around in London to see it. And the book is How They Murdered Princess Diana. And this is, as we just said, the 10th book, where this kind of brings them all together into one. And this would be the one to get if you've not seen any of them before. John Morgan, what can I say? Keep asking the questions on our behalf, John. And please God, some of them get answered eventually.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Yeah, well, that's right. That's what our hope is. And I think that eventually they will. Eventually they will. But that may be after the Queen's gone.
Well, John, again, thank you for coming on. How They Murdered Princess Diana, John Morgan. Appreciate your time, John.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.